Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000 for the 100th time. That's right, our special 100th episode. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And lots of news to go over, several tournaments to review results, and of course, that aforementioned special 100th episode, Ask Us Anything, so we'll go over that as well. But first of all, I got some great new toys that are out there when it comes to playing tournaments. And the first thing I noticed is you're seeing a lot more of these. Scarry told us from Scarcast was the first to show this to me. And then our own Mark Wright has commissioned some of those for our team logos. But the latest thing in competitive play, you'll probably see this in your local area as well, and I highly recommend them, is these new objective markers. They're unlike poker chips. They actually extend out the size of a poker chip, and then they add the 3 inches. And they're just awesome. Ray, have you seen these?
So I've seen the one that Scarry's got, and I was pretty excited to see those. You know, it's nice not have to have this ambiguous area of what, you know, uncertainty. You don't have to worry about any gotcha moments with objectives like these.
Yeah, those gotcha moments, especially when you're like, oh, he's within 3 inches. And then your opponent goes, you want to measure that for me? And he's like 3 inches and a quarter. So you lose the point. You just look at, or you sit there and go, I got that. No, yeah, I got that. And you're now measuring how many models are within 3 inches. And then, of course, there's the, okay, you knocked that one over. He was there. No, he wasn't. Yes, he was. So now you just look at this. How many guys are on the disc? I got 4. You got 5. You hold the objective. No questions asked. It's so simple. It's one of those things where the War Machine guys have been doing this for years with their steamroller missions, and it's one of those, because they said War Machine, like half the people, ew, we're not doing it that way. But they're awesome. They're really cool. And because they're bigger, you can do, you know, a lot more stuff with them, you know, from a hobby standpoint. Scarry has his logos on it. Our team's putting our team logos on them. But you could do all kinds of really neat for you, you know, hobbyists to really make them a little bit bigger than just the traditional flag that you used to see for objectives or a pile of bits. You can have a lot of fun with them because it's going to be about, let's see, 3, 6, about 7 inches in diameter. So you got a lot of space to work with. So a very cool toy, a new thing out there. I thought that was pretty exciting. The other one, we were just eyeing and Googling and over it both on Friday at our game night and then just right before we started recording, is this brand new app called ITC Battles. Right? Describe it to us for a second.
Yeah, so it's a third-party app that is not affiliated with Frontline Gaming or the ITC directly. It is an app where you can... It basically can take over your clock and the scoring sheet. But not only that, you can insert, you can keep track of your command points. You can keep track of your secondaries. If you don't remember what the secondary is, you can actually pull a little drop down and read what the rules for the secondary is. You can check the mission. You can check the deployment. One of the nice things is, you know, let's say you don't remember how to do a Vanguard strike and you don't want to do the whole, you know, grab a string from corner to corner and then measure 12 inches out in a half dozen places. It'll tell you, no, if you go from the, you know, these corners, this is how many measurements back away from that corner you got. So you can actually select all this. You can keep track of your entire tournament from rounds 1 through 6 in this, including what date it is. You can log them in. Our sometime co-host Don Husen posted it up on our team's website where he was using it to keep track for a tournament he was in over the weekend. And yeah, you can have these little, it almost looks like a, you know, a page sheet where you can keep track of how many bonus points, kill points, hold, you know, the hold objective points, you know, stuff for the secondaries. It's even got little links for the ITC rules, you know, the missions, the end of game stuff, you know, tape the stuff for tabling and, when people concede. And it's even got a built-in chess clock,
which is pretty handy. So a whole thing, basically, yeah, all that paperwork we do for ITC scoring, it's there on the could be on your phone, could be on a tablet. One other feature I liked as well is, you know, we got that rule that if you gain a command point through some various, you know, warlords, you know, I gain a 5+ every time you get a command point back if I spend a stratagem. There's a little checkbox to make sure that, yep, I got it this turn. So you know you don't get it again later, you know, or forget what turn it is. That sort of thing is in there. So it is super handy. I especially like the, you can basically hold down the or hover over one of the secondaries and lets you know what that secondary is. And it also is marked so you remind you which ones stack, which ones don't. That was a big issue with the tournament it was at this past weekend. Certain ones, you know, you take like, if you take it for this objective, you can't take it for this other objective. So make sure where your points go. That's laid out there. So my dream someday, Ray, I have a dream. Is that every table at my tournament has a, whether it be a tablet or some sort of touchscreen device, and that's your scoring. Every player can, so you have an actual scoreboard, and the players are no guesswork. This is exactly how we're scoring it. Everybody can see how it goes, and then at the end of the round, you can see, and as we're also walking by, we can see what the scores are, what turn there are, how they're doing. It makes it just so much easier because that is, for a lot of TOs, a big expense is all that paper, you know, that you have to print off new packets every tournament. So
that would be kind of cool. I mean, that's expensive to do when you're putting a lot of trust in your players having a tablet at all those tables. But I mean,
yeah, you're true. The other thing I would do is mount them, you know, there's, you know, they have those TV mounts. Some sort of, or like when you go to a key, like a trendier restaurants and stuff, they have the, you pay on an iPad rather than a cash register, have one of those mounting devices at each table so they can't walk off with the iPad. Now, funny, I said iPad out of habit. It's currently available, what I believe, only for Google devices or Android devices, excuse me, but at the Google App Store. But hopefully that'll also come out for iOS pretty soon. But all kinds of new fangled stuff coming out. There's some new score sheets floating around on the webs as well with a condensed. So again, the entire packet is getting much smaller, easier to print. So all kinds of fun stuff like that. So it's getting better and better to be in tournaments more than ever. It was a lot of fun. So speaking of being in tournaments, we'll be talking a little bit more about tournaments in the next segment. Of course, we'll be celebrating our 100th episode. Games Workshop has also decided to celebrate with us by previewing the 100th version of the Space Marine Codex. And it seems like they always come out with a new codex. So just in time for our 100th anniversary, we'll touch a little bit on that as well. There's been not as many leaks this week. Some of them have been unofficial, so we'll kind of probably push that back till next week when the codex is actually in our hands. But after the break, we'll go over last week's tournaments right after this.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. This week, we go over your tournament coverage from the previous weekend. We start off in the Land of the Roses. No parade this week, just the Hammer of Wrath GT. Ray, tell us about what happened there this weekend.
All right, so in fifth place, we got Lucas Miguel playing Eldari. Fourth place was Richard Cozart playing Chaos. Brandon Grant came in third with Astra Militarum. In second place was Jeff Poole with Orcs. And in first place was Carlos Kaiser playing Adeptus Custodes.
Yeah, really interesting to see Adeptus Custodes back at the top there. Let's take a look at Carlos's list. And it looks something like this. It starts off with a surprise Custodes battalion. Oh, it doesn't. It starts with, looking at Carlos's list, it starts with a spearhead detachment featuring Captain General Trajan Valeris. And then he's got not one, not two. Looks like he's got five Aquilan Custodians with Lastrum Stormbolters, Misericordia, and Solarite Power Gauntlets. And as well as a Vexus Praetor. In a fast attack slot, he's got two of the Palace Gravattack Twin Arcubus Blaze Cannons on both of them. And then the heavy support slot, he's got not one, not two, with a full three set of Caladius's Grav Tanks. And he's got them with the Twin Accelerator Cannons and the Twin Lastrum Bolt Cannons. And then attacks on a super heavy auxiliary detachment featuring the Orion Assault Dropship. And with that, he's got two of the Blaze Cannons, two of the Heavy Bolt Launchers, and two Lastrum Bolt Cannons. And there you go. Quick way to spend 2,000 points on the Emperor's Finest. And good luck finding that from Forge World. I believe most of these models are still out of stock.
Oof. Yeah, you call them the Emperor's Finest. They're also his most expensive.
Well, you know, Ray, if you have to ask how much it is, you probably can't afford it. That's what they say, at least. Of course, you still have to provide it, keep a list under 2,000 points. So that's just the way it goes. It's part of the rules. All right. Moving on to Jeff Poole's list featuring Orcs. Boy, you couldn't have anything more different. I mean, look at our top two players. Jeff did go 4-1, versus Carlos Kaiser went undefeated. You got like the minimalist list with like 20 models. Now you got this orc, this horde. So anyway, Jeff Poole starts off with a battalion featuring Evil Sons. Features a big mech with a custom force field and a power claw. As well, the war boss on bike, featuring a power claw and a shooter, and of course an attack squig. Don't leave home without it. Three units of boys, one unit of 30 of the shooter variety with a boss knob with the power claw and shooter. And then two units of sluggers and choppers, also 30 band squads, also with a boss knob, also fitted with a power claw and shooter as per index. In the elite slot, he took a knob with a wog banner, and a custom shooter and a power claw. And that rounds out that detachment. So the detachment is all Bad Moons featuring two weird boys, another blob of 30 boys. This happens to be the shooter variety, and two units of 10 Gretchen. One unit of tank busters, 10-man squad. And that ends your Bad Moon detachment. But then he adds another detachment of Death Skulls featuring, surprise, surprise, the specialist detachment, the Dreadwaw from Vigilus. Three big mechs with shock attack guns. Also with Garot Oilers, three units of 10 Gretchen, and added Mad Dog Snickrock. So I actually played a list very similar to this on Friday as a practice, and it's annoying as hell. It really is. Because those mech shotguns, if you don't have enough terrain or something to hide behind, you're just going to be picking up models. And it's one of those things where, well, it's only against knights. No, it actually gets, because it's got 2d6 shots per gun. It can pick up large units, can pick up infantry. It's so annoying. And then he's got all those, but then once you get after that turn round alpha strike. Oh, and by the way, the nothing's more annoying than the Daka Daka Daka, the whole, every time he rolls a six, oh, we got more hits. And you're like, does it ever stop? So it's just an overwhelming amount of firepower. But there you go. That's the action from Pasadena. Some other notables at this particular tournament. As I mentioned, Brandon Grant coming in third. Richard Kozer coming in fourth. Jessica Bowman coming in sixth, just with her Imperium list we've talked about in a couple other times. Two friends of the show, Jay Jones, formerly of the Roll of the Seas podcast, came in ninth. He's back playing Eldari, and his co-host, Andrew Dickinger, is back playing Deathwatch. He came in 12th. So wishing those guys best of luck. And then also friend of the show, Josh Jenny, came in 18th with Chaos. So very cool to see that.
Take me to the front.
Ray, what next event are we going to now?
Siege World is next. In fifth place, we had Jason Barah playing Nurgle. Sam Henley in fourth playing Chaos. Ben Cherwin was in third with Eldari. Aaron Along in second with Imperium. And first place playing Orcs was Jim Orr.
So let's go do to reflect the overall standings. We'll take a look at those particular lists. So with Jim Orr with his Orcs, he should legally change his name to Orc instead of Orr. That'd be really cool. Unless he's a Boston Bruins fan. But anyway, moving on. Starting with another battalion of Bad Moons, three big mechs. Two big mechs. Wow, not all of them have the shock attack gun. That's amazing. Only one of them does. He's got a war zone, entire war zone on bike. No, war boss on bike. And the other big mech is on a bike with a combi scorcher. Interesting. Two gargantuan squads of Gretchen. One squad of 32, one unit of 25, and one unit of 22. Then he's got another unit of 15 tank busters, and then a unit of 15 ludas, followed by a smattering of four smasher guns. Those are really gross, too. That whole roll 2d6, if higher than your toughest, you take a wound. Oh, it's disgusting. Second detachment in this army is Death Skulls. Once again, three big mechs, all with shock attack guns, except for one, which has a choppa and a custom four field. Three units of 10 Gretchen. And then the final detachment is Evil Sons, featuring two weird boys, a large squad of 24 Slugga and Choppa boys, and then a second unit, the same thing, and then a 10-man squad of Gretchen. I'm curious to see what he does with almost 80 Gretchen just in that one detachment alone. Are they just a screen? Are they pushing forward for table control? That's just nuts. Not to mention, I also want to know if he's using a movement tray, because that's going to be a pain in the neck to move all those models. Anyway, that was Jim's Orr's list. Looking at Aaron Along's Imperium list, Aaron starts off with a Catagen Brigade, Colonel Strachan, Company Commander, as well as a Primaris Psyker. He's got 5 infantry squads, followed by a 5-man squad of Tempestus Scions. In the elite spot, he's got an Astropath, Minister and Priest, as well as, looks like, 5 Bulgrin. Two with slap shields, the other ones with brute shields and Bulgrin Mauls. 3 scout sentinels to round out the fast attack, and then 3 units of 3 mortars for the heavy attack slots. That fills out his brigade. Then he adds a super heavy auxiliary detachment featuring Rubuti Gilliman. Then adds a battalion of Blood Angels. So Smash Captain, Librarian Dreadnought, and the Sanguinor. 3 units of 5 scouts. And then in the elite slot, he's got 5 veterans, all with jump packs, with infernal pistols and storm shields. One is given the power fist, and then the veteran comes whacking in with the thunder shield, thunder hammer, and storm shield. So, slight modifications, but pretty much the list that Aaron's been running all year. So interesting to see that. Some other notables at the tournament. Matt Root came in 6th with Gene Steeler Colt. Interesting, he's not playing Chaos, so I thought that was interesting. Andrew Ford, who we've talked about several times on the show, came in 10th with Imperium. And Daniel Sansone came in 19th with Forces of the Hive Mind, another name that we've talked about quite a bit here on the show.
Demon, fear my wrath!
Ray, where are we off to next?
Next up is Warzone Gigabytes 3. In 5th place, we had Daniel Hesters playing Imperium. 4th place was John Moore playing Tau Empire. In 3rd, we see Stephen Mitchell playing Necrons. 2nd is Max Shushard playing Tau Sept. And in 1st, playing Chaos, is Mark Dat Perry.
Must be an inside joke with that name. It's pretty funny. So what's Mark looking at? He has a wide variety of chaos going on here. So he starts with a battalion of demons. Chaos Undivided. So he's got a mishmash of all kinds of forces of chaos. Starts with a demon prince. Does not say specifically of which faction. Interesting. There it is. It's broken out differently. So he's got a Khorne with a demonic axe, so he's probably going to upgrade that to go chop down some knights. He's got the Contorted Epitome with Phantasmagoria and Symphony of Pain. Then a troop slots. He's got, looks like a minimum squad of horrors, and then 10... Oh, no, it doesn't. Wow, this is a really strange layout. I'm just curious how he did this. So one, two squads of 10 Brimstone Horrors, and then one squad of 30 Plague Bearers. Then he opens up with a second detachment. This one is also Chaos Undivided. More demons coming to the forefront. Two Poxbringers, unit of three Nurglings, a unit of 10 Poxwalkers, and another unit of 10 Poxwalkers. Two Foul Blight Spawns, and then rounds it out finally with a Thousand Suns Supreme Command Detachment with the usual Ahriman on Disc, Demon Prince of Zeech, with, of course, Gaze of Fate, High Magistrate, and Infernal Gateway. And then another Demon Prince with, of course, the Helm of the Third Eye. So kind of an interesting variation on the Jim Vessel style list. Doesn't have quite as many of the, you know, the wall of Nurgle. But interesting enough, I just want to make sure I get this total right because I'm trying to do this on the fly. But it looks like he's got almost 350 points in summoning still left over.
Wow.
So it's, it's not actually a full 2,000 point list that he starts with. So pretty interesting list that's going on there. So that, I think, will be the secret sauce in how he plays this, that he has that much customization going back and forth. Max Shushard with Tau Sept. I haven't heard much of Tau this week. Made into the second slot. And the wall of text that is his list looks something like this. Starts off with a Tau Sept Vanguard featuring Darkstrider, who drives me nuts with that minus one toughness all the time. Two Riptides, all with smart missile systems, advanced targeting systems, and heavy burst cannons. And then a Ghost Gill battlesuit. Love that model. Don't see it much on the table, though. And looks like with a cyclic ion raker and two burst cannons. Second attachment is indeed a battalion, also Tau Sept. Two Cadre Fireblades and Commander Sattersun. One, two, three units of Strike Team Fire Warriors, five man strong. A blob of one, two, three, four, five, six stealth suits, all with burst cannons. Actually, what's the minimum size to be considered a blob? I don't know. I think six is kind of small. And then in the heavy sports slot, like, what's that?
I think 15 is the minimum. There we go.
So moving forward, if you're less than 15, you're not a blob. Heavy sports slots. He's got one, two, three broadsides, all with the high yield missile pods. And his last attachment is an Outrider, also Tau Empire, Tau Set, I should say, as well. He's got an Ethereal with an Honor Blade and a, 36 tactical drones. Yay, all shield drones. I'm curious to see how this list would work together because he's got a lot of the typicals. You know, he's got the the Riptides and the shield drones to keep him alive. He's got the broadside suits. Don't see stealth suits other than like Paul McKelvey's very mobile list. And you don't see Ghost Gill much anymore. And usually the Ghost Gill would go with the stealth suit. So that's interesting. I'm curious to see how that all goes together.
Initiating attack protocol 23.
Where are we going to next after the Great South?
The last tournament we're going to be talking about today is the London Open Part 2.
So this caught me off guard. This is not the London Open. This is a other event.
It's a London Open.
Same organizers, but not the big one. Okay.
Yeah. So in fifth place was Thomas Dutch playing Orcs. In fourth was Liam Royal playing Eldari. In third, James Grover playing Asuriani. Alex Petford came in second with Imperium. And in first, playing Cult Mechanicus, is Bethany Taylor.
Yeah, I love this list that Bethany's been running, and I was seeing if she's made any changes, and made a few changes since we last talked about it. She starts off with a super heavy auxiliary detachment featuring a Knight Crusader. In case you're scoring at home, that's the one with the Avenger Gatling cannons. And then she goes into a battalion of Forge World Mars featuring Belisarius Call, Tech Priest Manipulus with a transonic cannon. I gotta look up what that is. I think that's like a Forge World character, right?
What was it?
Tech Priest Manipulus.
Yeah.
But this is the real reason I like this list. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 units of 4 Cataphron Breachers, all of them with Arc Claw and Heavy Arc Rifle. That is not only a ton of firepower, but they're all except to secured and have a huge footprint. And then in 2nd Battalion, she's got Adeptus Mechanicus as well. This time she went with Forge World Stygies 8, 2 Tech Priest Engine Seers, 4 units of 5 Skitarii Rangers, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Iron Striders with the Twin Cognos Autocannon. So she's got speed, she's got resiliency, she's got board presence, and a truckload of shooting. I really like this list. And then in second place was Alex Petford. And he starts with a battalion of Imperial Guard. You know, you see Vestorians all the time in England. You never see them here stateside. There's got to be that whole... Definitely must play to the ETC missions versus the ITC missions.
Yeah.
So he's actually taking from Vigilus Defiant, the Emperor's Fist Tank Command Company. So he's got 2 tank commanders, all with the... One is the Punisher... Yeah, both of the Punisher variety. 3 units of 10 infantry and a commissar. And the second attachment is Adeptus Mechanicus, as he took Forge World Correa. Features 2 Tech Priest Engine Seers, 3 units of 5 Skitarii Rangers. And then last but not least, he's got a super heavy detachment of Tyrannus. And he's got 1, 2, 3 Knight Crusaders. That's impressive that you're able to fit in that much army with 3 knights in your list.
Yeah.
I played something similar to this when I was at the last LVO I was at, because you've got the 3 knights and those 2 tank commanders. I know what you think. Oh, just pick off the infantry. The infantry is like insignificant. It just sits there in the back and holds objectives. There's just so much firepower and it's so much strength 8, toughness 8. You just... Very few armies have enough tools to deal with that much vehicleness. And that's a new word I'm coming up with, vehicleness. All right, so that was our tournaments for this week. As you may have known, also in Serbia, the world's greatest 40K players were gathered for the European Team Championships. So we're going to try and get some of the players who were involved in that to talk about that in the next few weeks. So we're going to hold off on our coverage from that for right now. But some interesting seeing that not only the ETC format, but also the team format. So lots to discuss in future episodes. Meanwhile, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back right after this. All right, welcome to the break. As promised, we will be answering your questions. So we appreciate all our fans who supported with us, whether from the very beginning from episode 1 or you just jumped on the show late here, the 90th and 99th episode. Appreciate all your support. Love all the downloads, love all the comments. Interesting enough, you guys were not the most inquisitive bunch. Didn't ask us a lot of questions when it came to ask us anything, but we got a couple questions, some of them on our Facebook page, some of them through other channels. So we'll get started. The easiest one we've had so far is, how did you guys get involved in 40K in the first place? So Ray, do you want to take that one?
Sure. I got involved mostly because I was getting tired of the way Friday Night Magic tournaments were working out for me. I got tired of basically facing the same deck for three rounds every Friday and ended up walking to the game shop next door that wasn't card related. It was, you know, miniatures related, and you know, seeing the people playing with these painted up models that they did themselves, while, you know, the idea of painting the models was a little intimidating. Seeing the factions, it looked actually looked really fun. So I started looking into it.
So is this here locally or?
Yeah, no, the same game shop I play at today.
That's pretty
Hero Outpost.
That's pretty cool. I almost had the exact opposite experience. I started off as a modeler, very young. All my cousins did it, and my dad did it. So we were always, so my earliest memories were helping my dad with building models and eventually building ones of my own. Matter of fact, my dad still has one of them. It's a god-awful paint job, but he still displays it in his den. And but it was always the hard part. You build these models, and you know your parents are, well, you can't play with it. Well, what the heck did I put this together for? So, and then I transitioned because there were a lot of figures at that point. My dad was real big in these display case models, you know, of usually Napoleonic type characters as well as airplanes. So when I first discovered historical gaming, I loved it. Oh, it was so awesome. It's like, now I can actually play with the models. But for those of you who've ever played historical gaming, one of the problems is there aren't a lot of army construction rules because you're supposed to play what they played in history. So some battles, it's a lot of fun. Some battles, it's like, hey, we're going to do Custer's Last Stand. Who wants to be Custard? Oh, not me. So it was always that, you know, trying to find other games that had more of a balanced approach. And I just felt like there's got to be something else out there. And then sure enough, when a friend of mine says, well, have you tried this game? And I was like, never seen it. So we went to the local game store in our area, and sure enough, there was Warhammer 40,000. And I remember seeing a picture of a blood letter, and I thought, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I need more of this in my life. And the whole idea that you can make your own armies, and it was very different for me because I was so used to being told, you know, if your detachments must look like this, and it was total free form, and stuck with it ever since. So very excited. Unfortunately, that game store back in Connecticut has gone out of business, but I know a lot of the Connecticut players have now gone on to other stores. But I have found a home here in Phoenix and got a chance to meet Ray via the meeting at that same game store, so which was really cool. Which actually brings us to our second question. How'd the podcast get started?
Well, that's kind of funny because it's got a bit of a long start. It kind of starts off with the last podcast you were part of, which was the 11th Company, which I kind of found while I was starting to do research into the hobby in the first place, and I became a big fan of that.
Yeah, he was one of my stalker fans.
You guys.
Yeah, I was.
No, even funnier, because I was looking for someone through, because they had the forum. And I was looking for someone local to the area that could help teach me in a play, and you're the one that ended up contacting me.
Yeah, I just moved to Phoenix from Philadelphia. I was actually on the show when I was in Philly. I really enjoyed my time on the 11th Company. I don't want to take away from our podcast, but it was a very different experience. And at that point, I started off as a segment contributor, which meant I recorded a 20 to 30 minute segment once a month, and then it became twice a month, and it became three times. And then when one of the new editions came out, Neil asked me to join the main discussion group, and I never left. And so got really involved in the competitive play in the Philadelphia, D.C. area, so I got heavily entrenched in the Nova type things. And then when I moved out to Phoenix, one of my co-hosts was living in Phoenix at the time. And I was like, hey, I'm in town. When do you want to get in a game together? He says, what are you doing Thursday? Well, it's not going to work out for me Thursday. What are you doing this weekend? Moving out of Phoenix. I'm like, oh. So so I was kind of hard pressed. So I ended up showing up at Outpost, and Ray was nice enough to reach out to me. You know, hey, do you want to get together? And And it's funny because the store I went to was a good hour away from my house back in Philadelphia, and it was always hard to find a regular place. We're used to playing in a friend's basement, and they weren't the most competitive guys. And so when I showed up at Imperial Outpost and the place was just packed with players, I was like, holy cow, what is this? And haven't left since. So it's just a really awesome experience. Really enjoy it. And so at that point, it was like Ray held me at gunpoint, says, we're going to do a podcast together. No, that's not what happened. But yeah, Ray approached the idea, hey, would you ever get back into podcasting? And I was like, depends on what we did. And so we kind of hashed out a couple ideas for a format. And we had all the gizmos ready to go from the last podcast. So here we are. Neil did not want to participate. He's fully entrenched. By the way, those of you who backed his game with Guerrilla Tabletop Games there, your shipment just arrived. So you should be seeing fulfillment for all your Kickstarter support. And other than that, he supports our podcast and any other podcasts that involve 40K, and he's still involved with Nova as well. So he sends his regards to all the fans.
Yeah, I think the funniest thing was is it took us forever to figure out a name for the podcast.
Yeah. This is seriously the 27th choice, but I just think it's the best one. I mean, every time we're like, let's see if this one, oh, there's already a podcast called that. What do you think of this one? That stinks. How about this one? That's pretty lame too. Yeah, I thought so, but I'm running out of ideas. And then somehow we came up with the, you know, I was like, this is going to work. We're so excited about it. So still am, still love the intro, still fits our motif, what we wanted to get done with the show. So we're very excited with that. And again, every now and then I get a couple questions. The music that we use in the intro, as well as the breaks, and then also under our White Crow Studios commercial, is a Megadeth song called Set the World on Fire, which actually now goes into, what was your most embarrassing moment? For me, it was Ray and I were getting to know each other, and we both have a love for the band Megadeth. And he asked me, what's your favorite album? And I decided to just gush about how much I love the album Peace Sells, but he was buying, and how cool it was, and what songs I like on it. And he's just staring there, nodding his head, not saying much. And finally goes, yeah, the album came out before I was born. I've never felt more old than my life than that moment. So yeah, thanks for that, Ray. Appreciate that.
Made for a great joke, considering I'm a Megadeth fan myself.
I was like, yeah. Anyways, so what was your most embarrassing moment, 40K related?
Honest, okay, so this is probably going to be it for me, is I traded a bunch of Grey Knight stuff back when they were still running their 5th edition codex. I think it was just more Necron stuff, to be honest. Because I found out what happens if you put Necrons in just a perfect place during the monsoon season in Arizona. Fun fact, while the plastic bends in the heat, so does the green rod, and while you can re-bend the regular plastic back with more heat, it is exceedingly hard to take care of the same thing with that green tube.
No.
So anyway, but yeah, I had the ED gauze flares. But that's not the embarrassing thing. I traded off these Grey Knights saying, it's fine, I can rebuild them up in time for, you know, when the 6th or 7th edition codex comes out. I don't remember which edition we were running at the time. But yeah, you know, I can buy, you know, a box here, a box there, and I'll have the army completely rebuilt. Grey Knights are just coming out. Best I can tell from the rotation, Grey Knights will be the last codex. It was on a Friday. I made that trade, got to the game shop right after, only to find out that in 2 weeks, the Grey Knights codex was coming out.
Whoops.
Yep. Ended up not rebuilding the Grey Knights, but not because I didn't want to, just because I ended up just focusing on the factions I had until recently, where I got stuck with faction ADD, in which case I jumped at almost every faction. Not every faction, but almost every faction.
And it is rather contagious. So. So, interesting question. What are your thoughts on an all Primaris Marine Codex?
The idea is kind of neat, but realistically speaking, I don't think they're ever going to get rid of everything. Not at least for like 5 or 10 years. Like 5 or 10 years down the road, maybe, but as of right now, they're not going to get rid of the stuff that they've, you know, the non-Primaris Marines. I'm sure at this point, almost all the sprues are paid for, so it's just, you know, they don't have to worry about part of their profits going towards that. Whereas with all this Primaris stuff, they're probably to a point, you know, some of that money's going towards, you know, paying for that or rebuilding their, whatever they use for budgeting for the next sprues. But the idea is neat, but we're not going to see something like that for a while.
So I thought the other end of the spectrum, not only do I really like the idea, I think what I would double down on it, you still have the standard Primaris Marines, for lack of a better term, but I think it'd be really cool to see a new chapter that stands alone, kind of like how Space Wolves and Dark Angels and Blood Angels stands alone from the Space Marine Codex. And that is an all Primaris chapter. So we're going to create a new player with their own background, and they're kind of the new guys on the block, and how they may not play nice. The fact that they're not really founded by a Primarch. How do they mesh? I think it'd be a really good background. Playstyle wise, it'd be nice to see, you know, just as the Dark Angels and the Blood Angels are a little bit divergent from the basic Codex. They're still Primaris Marines, but they could have their own uniqueness that you don't see in the standard Codex. I think it'd be really cool to see that. What is that background? What would that be? I'm not sure. I haven't really thought it through beyond that. But I thought that would be really neat to see that. You see glimpses of it here and there in some of the backgrounds. I know in Vigilis, they mentioned 2 or 3 Primaris-only chapters. So it'd be pretty cool. I think it'd be a really neat idea, and I welcome it. I think it'd be great. So,
yeah. Well, fun fact, you know, that we're at the very beginning of the next wave of, you know, Primaris Space Marines, the Vanguard Space Marines. I think they're is what the little mini codex that came out in Shadow Spear called them. There's one more coming because, you know, they already admitted that. You know, you've got the basic armor. The stuff coming out is the Phobos armor. We're going to see Gravis armor. We're going to see a whole set of stuff. Just everything's in Gravis armor. So before we get anything like an all Primaris Marines Codex, expect one more wave of Primaris Space Marines. Maybe in a year. Maybe in 6 months. Who's to say? But we're going to see it.
I definitely think they're going to, yeah, I think there's more still yet to come out. And I was shocked.
Well, no, they've admitted that they've got a whole lineup of Gravis Marines that's not, you know, ready for release yet.
I like them. I've definitely grown on them as also just, I know with our game group, I've been arguing back. I think they're almost a little overpowered. A lot of my friends think I'm thinking the sky is falling, but the math hammer is so far in my favor, but we'll see. It could also be one of those things where they made out. As I'm seeing a lot of the new Primaris armies, there's only about 40 or 50 bodies on the table, but it's still 2 wounds each. It still takes a while to chew through them. So we'll see. Reserve judgment based on play experiences. But I know there's been some new armies coming through from that new codex already. So I'll be curious to see how that pans out. Last question of the night. Then we're going to, actually got 2 more questions to take that back. If you weren't playing 40K, what other tabletop games would you be playing?
Outside of 40K, I'm actually kind of a fan of AOS. it's kind of fun. The story, you know, a lot of people give it crap because of, you know, it was what came out of the destroyed old world that was fantasy. But they kind of wrote themselves into a bit of a corner there. And the way that they themed this, you know, this new game is, it's pretty cool. I think a lot of people who don't like it just don't give it a real chance, especially now that they actually gave it points.
Yeah, the initial launch where they had Play What You Want to Play was very, reminded me of the my experience with historical gaming. Most historical games do not have point values either. And you're supposed to play based on what was in the history books or something mutually agreed upon. And I can tell you right off the bat, that doesn't work too well or gets boring really fast.
Yeah. Also, they had some rules that you could tell it was kind of them trying to tell people that they're taking the games a little too seriously.
Yeah, like the mustache rule. I forgot what that was. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely got a bad rap there. I admit the newer edition is interesting. You like it a lot more than I do. I can't get past the initiative system. I have real trouble with that. Apparently, people really like it. So I'm like, okay, it's all you.
So what about you? What would you be playing?
No, that's a good question, because for a brief minute there, I was kind of dipping my toe in a couple other games. And I tried them, and it didn't work out for me for various reasons. And not that they're bad games. It's just... wasn't my experience. So I did try my hand at War Machine. I cannot wrap my brain around the whole focus point system. I like hoard them. They're like, do I play it now? And the, my friends are trying, yes, now. All right, and I'm going to put another focus. No, don't there. I'm like, I don't understand. When am I supposed to focus? When's not? And the part I get, you know, as a self-proclaimed terrain snob, I cannot play with doilies and felt flat systems. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I can't deal with this. So War Machine was not for me. I tried Infinity. I tried real hard. The learning curve from demo game to competitive play is extremely steep. I was also incredibly frustrated with, although I have a lot of modeling experience, I never had much fun with metal models. And you look at those awesome models where they're painted by Angel, and you're like, wow, this is going to be great. Mine are just like a disaster. They're like, they're hard to get together. They're a lot smaller, so they're hard to pin. And actually one of the best Infinity podcasts is local to here to Arizona. And they laugh at me like, all you got to do is do this. And I'm just like, it sucked all the hobby joy. So at this point, I don't even want to touch this army anymore. And that's, there's the size of Kill Team. They're like 15 models to an army. So I gave up on Infinity as much as I liked the game and the whole Blade Runner aspect of it. Over the weekend, I was trying to get lured into playing Blood Bowl again. That was actually my very first Games Workshop product that I tried. And I just have to see if they, the biggest problem I have with Games Workshop's, with Blood Bowl specifically, it's a campaign game. And so unlike 40K, where you just, I got lost, I got tabled, re-rack, and we'll play another game and it shouldn't affect anything. Because it's a campaign game, if you get tabled, you are screwed. And you literally have to play like your next game. I remember I once had a really good team going and I ran into a bad matchup. And the very next game, I had to play with only 9 players on the field at kickoff out of 11 and no substitutes. Because if you forfeit the game, you get none of the points. So therefore, I could never get out of this predicament of not having enough points to rebuild my team. So eventually, after playing one or two games with only 9 players and slowly rebuilding, it was just like, okay, trash it, start over. That to me is crap. I was very disappointed. The whole aesthetic about orcs and dwarves and ogres beating the snot each over a free-for-all form of football is absolutely hilarious and a very fun game. But there's definitely some issues with the game, and I do not know if the new version has fixed that or not. So for all I know, the new version is much better. We'll see. So I may dip my foot back into the Blood Bowl waters.
Yeah, I can't really do sports games. I don't know. I can't keep... you know, the drive for a game like that. I've tried with others that were sports based, that were tabletop games that weren't just, you know, sports. They were Blood Bowl like, but I just couldn't get behind them.
I don't know, there was something about it that, because I'm a big sports fan as well, so I was always behind it. There were a couple quirks, especially the early versions of Blood Bowl was definitely a parody of professional sports, and you could see who they were making fun of and why, and the joke behind it. So it was kind of cool to see that. So it was a lighthearted game, wasn't never meant to be super competitive, and though it could be if you really wanted to. I liked it a little bit better than, say, like fantasy football or fantasy sports that we play regularly, because basically all that is you build an army per se and then watch real TV and watch real games on TV, and hopefully that will determine what your army does. So this way I had a little more control of actually playing with the players I put together and work out the synergy. So I like that. I definitely felt some of the earlier editions, you were kind of pigeonholed into this team only excels if you build the team this one way. There weren't a lot of variation, just kind of like there's a lot of mono builds and bad codices. There's the same problem in Blood Bowl. But apparently these new rules, I was flipping through them, they've got a neat new system. The free agents are like relics, so that was kind of neat. And that you have to buy them each game. You can't hold on to them. They've got some pre-made teams, so it could be better. I have to, saying I've dipped my toe into it. I have not gotten much further on it. But that was the fun of Blood Bowl. I have many fond memories, and I also have several disastrous memories as well. All right, and the last question of the night, and this has kind of been a hot topic throughout. Let's save this one for last. What are your guys' thoughts on the Pro Tabletop event going on in Atlanta in December? So for those of you who are unfamiliar with this event, Pro Tabletop is a group of newcomers to the tournament circuit of all things 40K, but they come to you from an esports background, so they've got lots of money behind them. So this is their first foray into a large tournament. It is a 144-person event. Tickets are on sale. And what makes them different, the first thing that everybody latched onto is the prize money. $10,000 in prize support. Winner gets $5,000. Not product, not gift certificates. Flat. I'm assuming they're giving out a check. I'm assuming they're not giving out cash. But $5,000 for first place. And after that, people start kind of tweaking into that. And the first thing that first come up is, well, we already have a bad enough issue with cheating in 40K. When you've got that kind of prize money on the line, how many people are going, how many referees are you going to need to make this work? So, Ray, what are your thoughts on, does prize money make the event, or is that going to be a hindrance or a help?
I really think that this has the potential to go either way. It could end up very bad or it could end up very good. I don't think it's going to end up anywhere in the middle. It's going to be absolutely one way or absolutely the other. I think it's great that we're seeing, more of that, esports focus. I do think that, playing 40K can have that ability given the right technology added on. But yeah, the cash price support can be a big problem for people who want to cheat. So, if they've got the right people keeping an eye on the matches, then I think that'll make all the difference.
And they have mentioned that they're expecting, I think, one judge for every seven tables is what they're offering. And that may change. That's one of the other things is, they've been very reactive since they launched about 3 weeks ago with their website and what their event is going to be about. So what you hear today may be changing 2-3 weeks from now. So my advice is check in on them, because there's a lot going on here that if you're running your own event, there's a lot to be learned here. So because from a TO standpoint, there's always that, is it the prizes or the experience? What is it that drives players to your event? I've always gone for the experience, because that middle row, if you're doing a 64-person event, the guys who finish between 8th and 50th are going for a good time. They want to have an exciting time, still a competitive match, an enjoyable tournament. The guys at the top of the rungs, they're there to win. They're there to get their points. The guys at the very bottom were there just to, you know, get some games in and have some fun. So you always want to, I always focus on the best experience. What does best experience mean is going to be different for every player. And what I like about this tournament is they're pushing a lot of concepts we've kicked around for our tournaments, both when I was in East Coast and now here in Phoenix. And I'll be honest, in some cases, I just flat out chickened out because it was so radical to the player base that I didn't think people would catch on. One number one, which I did not chicken out on, is a fixed terrain map. I used to do the Nova format and brought that to the West Coast. I've since modified it. The feedback I got was people didn't like that every map was the same. So now I have three maps that I rotate. Same number of terrain pieces, but I now go through. So you have a variance, but you don't have a light, medium, or heavy table. They're all the same amount of terrain density. This tournament also has a fixed terrain. And a matter of fact, they're part of your prize support is if you sign up for the event, you get one of their mats, which has the terrain actually outlined where it needs to go, which is actually something Neil did at his event. This is back in the Stone Age, kids, before we had fat mats. He actually used the big sheets of construction paper that you get from a teacher's outlet. And so you have the long rows of tables that you see at tournaments. So it's 4 feet across and like 9 miles long. And he would just roll it down, tape it to the table, and then took a magic marker, 6 feet, 6 feet, 6 feet, wrote the table numbers on there. And then when we set up the terrain, he went around with a marker and did an outline around the terrain piece. So every player knew this is where the terrain was supposed to be. And at the end of the tournament, you just untape it and throw the whole thing out. Easy peasy cleanup. They're kind of doing the same thing, except it's on the same neoprene surface. The thing they've added to it, though, is they actually put a grid on the system, on the table. So the idea is to eliminate clever elastic rulers and other questions when it comes to measuring distances. You can do quickly. Okay, I'm at 48 inches. I should be in range because I'm 4 squares away. They're 1 foot by 1 foot squares. So very convenient for the game. The other thing is the objective markers, where they need to be placed, are already there. You just put the objective markers, and they are the super large objective markers we talked about earlier in the show, the full poker chip plus 3 inches around. So there's a lot of neat little ideas that they came into in the design of this. They're also offering the terrain that they're going to be building for the event is all laser cut MDF and going to be available. And they says buy it from us because not do we... is it a profit thing, but they want you to practice using their terrain. And the dimensions are slightly different than what we see from ITC. Are they radically different? No, not really. But it's just a different format. So it's one of those I kind of look at like, huh, okay, let's give this a try. This all ideas we've kicked around. One thing that came up as a criticism about the mats is they look like a sports field, you know, the red, white, and blue. And they've looked at us as well. I guess we could add like ash wastes and deserts and stuff like that. And just imprint the grid on top of that. If you want that kind of aesthetic, will look better on TV. That's something they're trying to focus on. Again, it's an esports. They're trying to find a way that makes sure it looks great on television or to be streamed. So maybe that white background was a way to make the armies pop off the table. Perhaps it'll look better with more terrain. I'm not sure yet. I don't know what the right answer is. Either or works pretty well for me. The other thing they do is they've also kind of gone changed things up a little bit. And it's a pet peeve of mine, but I freely admit I've tossed around with this so many times and chickened out every time. Major events. If you want to broadcast, if you want to get eyes on an event when it comes to sports, you want to ensure that the final events, you got the most watched players, which are usually the best players, in the final rounds. Take like a tennis tournament. You know, like Wimbledon, it starts on a Thursday. but the finals are on Sunday when they have the most eyes on the table. Nobody's watching tennis at Thursday afternoon unless you're like a diehard fan. And then you're watching like the top player just demolish some guy in 30 minutes. What you don't want is random pairing. So now you get, you know, a match, a Brandon Grant versus a Jim Vessel on day one. And then one of them gets knocked out because it's single elimination, or that one loss will throw somebody into a really bad situation for winning in the tournament. So they actually have seeded the first round, and some players are really upset by that. Feel there's a bias because they're using the ITC scoring. The other part of me is like, I'm still not sure why you're holding back on ITC scoring, because you can use any mission pack you want, but hey, run your events. But the idea is that if Jim Vessel, for example, being number one in the ITC the last few weeks, was still number one, he'd be the number one seed. Who would he play in the first round? Probably some schmuck like me who hasn't got that many games in yet this year. Is that Jim's fault? No, it's my fault. If I think I'm taking myself serious and I want to do well at this tournament, get out and get some practice games in. I'm not going to make any apologies, because why I took those couple months off, the family issues came first. But I'm also not going to blame the system or the tournament organizers for my decision. So I'm kind of like, meh, that's kind of a excuse, I think, the players are. So I'm in favor of it. I think it'd be great. Nothing, and I also think it works out. You can do other scoring systems, so that way players who are less experienced get to play other players who are less experienced quicker, like round two and round three, as opposed to like round five and six, after they've had a trudging of bad games against better players. They've added a bracketing system to day two. I'm not sure if that's going to work. I have to read through it a little more clearly, but it's interesting. I've been a big fan of the bracket system, but they're doing theirs a little bit differently. So I have to read more into it before I base an opinion off of conjecture. So it's a very different format, and I'm curious to see how it goes. I want it to be successful in terms of the numbers, and so we can get an accurate picture of, is this a better way to go?
Right.
Because there's a lot of great ideas there going on. And I forgot there's one. I'm running a little long on this. There's also a neat idea with deployment. That's a really clever idea that they have, where each player can remove one of the deployment maps from contention before you roll for deployments. It's a neat idea. We're playtesting it in our play group. Some of our players, we're divided exactly down the middle. Half our team thinks it's a great idea. Half our team thinks it's baiting, because if you can choose your deployment map, then you only have to defend against three maps. Barney's like, there are certain maps that do really well, and some maps I stink at, depending on the matchup. So I'm not sure if I have that much control, but we'll see. We'll do some experimenting and talk about it in future episodes. So, Ray, what are your thoughts? I've been rambling too much.
Well, like I said, I think it's the kind of thing where we'll know for sure how good or bad it's going to be after the fact. It's a little too tough to tell beforehand. And it really is. It's going to depend on, it's going to depend on the people who show up and the people who judge. I mean, that'll make all the difference. You know, there are people who you hear have the tendency of cheating, and if you've got a bunch of those guys getting away with it, it's not going to be a great tournament. If you've got the judges that are actually able to keep an eye on things and keep that, a minimum to, basically zero, then it can be good. But, if the judges aren't calling things out when there's cheating, again, it can be a problem. So it's all going to be about the execution.
Yep, I agree with that. The other part of the execution, I'm also excited to see, let's use another sports analogy. Back in 94, I think it was, the United States hosted the World Cup, so the big soccer tournament. And although the United States did terribly, the soccer community has embraced what the Americans taught how to broadcast sports. And that was one of the things where at that time, if you were a sports fan living in America, trying to get European sports, soccer coverage, it was like some random pay-only cable channel or out of, you know, foreign newspapers. There wasn't a whole lot of websites. YouTube really wasn't a big thing at that time. But using the additional camera angles, you know, at that time, British Broadcasting, for example, used, I think, two cameras. They never used microphones. They also, and there's a lot of tricks of the trade. We use them here on podcasting, but using what's called compression and equalizing so that when the players kick the ball, it sounds, rather, you know, it's this big thud, you know, thunderous pounding of the ball. It's all manipulated through the soundboard and all that to make it sound like there's a bigger event really going on. So it was a huge upwelling. And now you see, especially now, that of the British and the German and the other European sports are getting a bigger presence here in America. Especially if you live here on the West Coast, you have little things like my son who wakes me up at 5 a.m. on Saturday to watch a soccer game on TV. Yay! But it's a lot more enjoyable. My point with all that is these guys are coming from an esports background. Most of the time when you see streaming 40K, it's, you know, two or three guys that volunteered their time and their money and have gotten really good with a bunch of webcams. When you think about what a professional photographer could do for that is fantastic, but who has skills at this point and who has the money for this? Guess what? Pro Tabletop Game has that. So I'd be really curious to see, as a player who may not be able to go to the event, what's the fan experience going to be like on the outside? Is it going to be more interesting to watch? Are the different camera angles? I mean, if you can make Pro Poker Tour look exciting on TV, what can you do with awesomely painted models on a great terrain table? I'm super excited to see what happens from there. So it's got my attention. There's a lot of great ideas. I agree with you. The execution is going to make it, you know, we'll be back next year. But I also have a feeling that even if they fall flat on their face with a cheating scandal or something else, this is kind of a watershed moment in our sport, in our hobby, and what's going to happen next. So I'm watching this with bated breath to see what happens. And as I said, they've been updating their website quite a bit. So as more updates come, we'll keep you guys abreast of that. So, all good things need to come to an end. Our 100th episode is coming to an end. So, right after the break, we'll go over the ITC Top 10 as well as upcoming ITC events. Be back after this. Hey there, Eric from the Exterminatus Podcast, and I'm talking to all you tournament organizers out there. Do you have an event coming up? Now, naturally, we talk about all those GT and major level events coming up throughout week to week, but we usually do it after the fact. If you want to talk about your event ahead of time to get some more people to come to your event, this is your opportunity. We are opening up our ad space for some lucky TOs to, you know, let us know about your event. Give us a minute to talk about what makes your event special and glow about your event. So drive some like-minded competitive 40K players to your particular area. Hit us up on our Facebook page for more details, and we'd love to support your local community. So here our way of giving back to tournament organizers throughout the world. Only your friends here at the Exterminatus Podcast. Welcome back after the break. Your ITC Top 10 here in the second Monday of August looks something like this. In 10th place from the great state of Texas, Matthew Ali occupies the 10th spot with 1,001 points. From Canada, Devin Swan in 9th place. The late but never forgotten Jeff Robinson still holding down the 8th place. From the great state of Florida, John Lennon in 7th place. From the UK, Chris Blackham holds down the 6th spot. Richard Sigler, I forget where he's from. I want to say California. If I'm wrong, Richard, sorry about that. But he's still in 5th place, and you can't take that away from him. From New Jersey, Nick Nativati holds down 4th place. Manny Chima from the UK in 3rd. TJ Lanigan, also from Canada, in 2nd place. And man, there's a lot of Canadians in the top 10. Because the Canadian conqueror, Jim Vessel, holds on to the top spot with a 70-point lead over TJ Lanigan. Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
All right. We've got the CCBB 2019 Warhammer 40K Champs in Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada. There is the OFCCITC Open in Vancouver, Washington.
I'm sure that stands for something. But don't...
There's the Dark Artisan Open in West Rainton, England. Vulcan's Summer Barbecue in Aberdeen, Washington. There's the Jester's Ball GT in Langley City, British Columbia. The Crucible Carnage at Coliseum of Comics, Kissimmee, in Kissimmee, Florida. Catacup 2019 Warhammer 40,000 Grand Tournament in McChesney Park, Illinois. Mythicos Warhammer 40K Blood Under the Sun Team Tournament in Roxbury Town, New Jersey. Battle for Maryland 2019 GT in Lutherville, Timonium, Maryland. They're also doing a team tournament at the same event. That's crazy. Yeah.
Ambitious.
It's crazy. There's a 2019 Wars on the Shore in Erie, Pennsylvania. Really? Yeah. Wargames Con 11 40K GT Championship in Austin, Texas.
Well, that snuck up on me. I had no idea it was next weekend. That's awesome.
They just keep sneaking
apparently,
up on you.
That's what happens when you take a few months off in the competitive circuit.
Yeah. There's the Hampshire Hammerers 40K 1750 ITC Relics of Galmec in England. Vanity Wars 40K ITC Tournament in Campbelltown, New South Wales. Castle Assault 40K 2019 in Hamilton, New South Wales. And that looks to be it. It's quite a bit.
Yeah. I have a feeling we won't be talking too much else other than tournaments next week. So lots of coverage. We'll bring that all to you next week, as well as some extended ETC coverage. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast for the 100th time. Appreciate all your support over the years, and we'll be back for more. Have a good night.